This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Matthew Wade and my co-host tonight is Scott Tetley. On tonight's edition of The Informer, we're going to hear the president of the Melbourne Chargers break his silence in an interview with Dean Beck on the team's former player who recently entered a guilty plea after being charged with travelling to the US to have sex with a six-year-old boy. Michael Quinn was caught in a sting earlier this year after paying an undercover agent who was posing as a pimp to have sex with a six-year-old boy as the Chargers prepared for the Bingham Cup.
We'll also chat with Dale Park from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby about Labor's historic appointment this week of Australia's first national equality spokesperson as part of its shadow cabinet in Parliament.
On tonight's edition of The Informer, we're going to hear Daniel Cyrus, the president of the Melbourne Chargers, break his silence on the team's former player, Michael Quinn, who now faces up to 13 years in jail after entering a guilty plea since being charged with travelling to the United States to have sex with a minor. Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice spoke with Cyrus.
Now, it's fair to say that as Melbourne prepared to wish you on your way and as you headed overseas towards the Bingham Cup, no one expected this to occur.
A Melbourne man arrested in Bates has pleaded guilty to child sex charges.
Rugby union player Michael Quinn has entered a guilty plea after he was charged with travelling to the United States to have sex with a six-year-old boy.
Michael Quinn was detained in May while on a rugby tour to the US. He now admits travelling to Los Angeles intending to engage in illicit sexual conduct with a six-year-old boy.
The 33-year-old agreed to a plea deal that will sentence him to 10 to 13 years in a prison.
The 33-year-old will appear at a sentencing hearing in October.
Mr. Quinn was caught in a sting at a Los Angeles hotel room last month after he paid an undercover agent posing as a pimp to have sex with the child.
He faces a minimum of 10 years in jail.
He was in America on a vacation and to play rugby in a tournament with his Melbourne Chargers rugby team.
Daniel, as president of the Melbourne Chargers team, your role is to look after all of these guys, and one of them goes AWOL. Must have been a difficult time for everybody.
Look, it's just a risk management exercise. So someone has, as an individual, has taken themselves and decided to do actions that are contrary to what the club and I guess what the sport stands for, and has ultimately done something that's quite. Now has been pled guilty, so it's quite a heinous act. For anyone who had known someone like this, it just is the biggest egregious betrayal of trust that you can put in someone.
And so, therefore has the potential to totally upend a team in a team environment that is on the trajectory to a single goal, like competing for the Bingham Cup. How did you handle that?
Well, look, we found out 2 days when we hit the press. So that was, I guess, 2 days before the tournament started.
Wow.
It was, I guess the most horrible thing you've had to deal with, to sit down with 60 of your best friends and say, this person's not coming because of this. The problem is, being tarred with it and to be attached, to say we are now a person down. From that, it's, to try and build people's, tap into their resilience, and a lot of people are.
But it must have upset some of the crew, though.
Oh, it was completely devastating. So sure. You've had someone who's... it's a personal betrayal. So from a club perspective, it's ultimate immediate expulsion. And from a rugby perspective, no longer a player, but still to be attached to it is impacts you severely. But from there, it was trying to get people who needed help the most, so the most help they can, inform the other clubs so that, to ensure that they wouldn't talk about it to our clubs, to our guys.
And how do you handle that? Because I imagine, in a sporting field, these things can be negatively used against you. They can be used as sledging. How do you handle that crap?
I guess it's the inbuilt respect of the sport itself. So, we haven't been impacted by sledging of any homophobic aspects for years.
Sure.
And also the clubs that we were playing against, ultimately were were being impacted very similar to us. Our name was in the paper, but they, they support us and they're our brothers on the field. And so it wasn't used in any negative way. It was everyone rallied to support us, say, what can we do to help? And for that, it's like, we're here to play rugby. We're here to have guys that are going to go on the field, and some will not be in the greatest mental state, but it rallies everyone together to say, we're going to get through this because someone's, an individual's not here. Individuals impacted us, but that's not going to stop us being, a great club, and to, just to support one another.
Neil, how do you harness that
and use it for positive force?
Look, it could go one of two ways when something like this occurs. When there's a crisis within any team, it can go one of two ways. It can fall to bits. Mm. And day one, a lot of players wanted to leave. A lot of players wanted to go home. And although I didn't let on, I felt amongst them. I don't think I've ever felt as hit as hard as I was during this period. We had great support from the Australian Rugby Union, from the Victorian Rugby Union. I was on the phone until about 2 a.m. to them. They were trying to make sure that they were safeguarding our mental health and that we were doing well. The club itself managed to get therapists in to help anybody that needed.
On the ground?
Yep.
Wow.
And
so it was help from one of the few people involved were from the other club, so they lent as whatever assistance we required.
Wow.
Which was great.
And we then had to turn that round to say, we are a club. We didn't want to make it so that we became too insular, because that would be against the ethos of the tournament. The Bingham Cup is about inclusive rugby and being out there to enjoy each other's company. So we had to blend it that, yes, there's a siege mentality, but it's not a siege against the other clubs. It's not a siege against the people who are there, but we're here and we're going to make sure that that person isn't going to affect our lives. We're going to go forward in a positive way. Whether that was going to work on day one in the on the training pitch, I wasn't sure.
You never know, do you?
No, but the focus wasn't there.
Right, right.
We went back. We took videos of coaching each day. We go back and we analyse, and then we bring the teams in and we talk to the teams about how they're going in their training runs. And we get them prepared for the game. And we took those opportunities with the videos, instead of actually just looking at the pitch, we took the opportunity to talk about our core values. We took a way to actually talk about what the Chargers meant to the guys and what being at the Bingham Cup meant to them as well. We actually did feel under siege. We never knew what was going to happen when we went down from the hotel the next day.
Yeah.
How was the world going to react to what's happened?
And there were press calls from all over the world wanting to speak to you.
Yeah, Dan got probably more than I did, and I got enough of them. Anybody whose email or phone number was on the website.
And it's fair to say that Joy 94.9 has deliberately not acknowledged the Melbourne Chargers Bingham win until this very interview that we're conducting right now, because we've not known how to handle the particular situation.
Look, at end of the day, no, it's not. This isn't something that you should be preparing for in your day-to-day activities. So, end of the day, we can't. There's no extra information that we can provide to someone who is for an offence that was before the courts, who's pled guilty, and now that individual is by himself, is not a part of the club.
But I just want to acknowledge to you guys as to why we haven't had you in earlier, because it's been a bloody long time since you won, and you should have been acknowledged before this point.
Oh, thank you.
But it's good to be here now.
Yes. Oh, look, we can make up for it. Like, I'm all cool. So how many other times you want to send, we'll come on.
We are speaking with Neil Hay, the head coach of the Melbourne Chargers and president, Daniel Sirius. Andrew the Apprentice and Dean Beck with you.
And that was an exclusive with Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice. And on behalf of the Informer, we'd like to also congratulate the Chargers on an incredible and much-deserved win amid very challenging times.
On tonight's edition of The Informer, we're looking at the Australian Labor Party, who recently appointed Terry Butler as its Shadow Assistant Minister for Equality, making her Australia's first national equality spokesperson in Parliament's Shadow Cabinet. And right now we're joined by Dale Park from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Thanks for joining us, Dale.
No problem. Thanks.
I guess I was interested to know, initially, what does an historic appointment like this mean for LGBTI Australians?
Well, I guess what we're really hoping that it will do is bring LGBTI issues to the forefront within Parliament. Obviously, the Coalition has said that Attorney Brandis will again be the representative taking forward LGBTI issues, so that means it will be discussed it at cabinet level. The Greens have always had for a number of years, they've had an LGBTI spokesperson. So this is really hopefully going to ensure that LGBTI issues are discussed openly and broadly in Parliament.
Particularly having one in like one of the two major parties, I guess, like you mentioned, the Greens have already had, you know, this spokesperson, but having one in one of the two major parties, yeah, do you feel like we'll see more significant strides in terms of equality?
Well, I hope so. If we look at what's happened in Victoria, Victoria really led the way in appointing Martin Foley as the equality minister. We also have shadow minister in the coalition and the Greens also. So, and we've seen some really great results as the fact that we've had Martin in that role. So we're really hoping that that will translate to a national level.
What are some of those things that have happened here in Victoria as a result of Martin Foley?
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things is that we have adoption equality. That was something that's got through and it's very impressive. We also have the Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, Ro Allen.
Yeah.
And we've also seen that the LGBTI task force has been set up to advise the minister on LGBTI issues. And I guess really encouragingly, the announcement of the $15 million for the Pride Centre.
Yeah, in the budget, that's right.
Are they just copying Victoria, though? Is everyone just copying Victoria, the progressive state?
Well, I mean, if they are, what a good thing to be copying. I mean, obviously, the lobby would and has advocated very strongly for, you know, a position like this for an equalities minister. So if we can lead the way, hopefully everyone else will follow.
Well, it shows that how pioneering Victoria has been, definitely. And I'm guessing, as you just mentioned, you know, the VGLRL, you know, they've been advocating for this for a long time. So I guess now with Terry Butler, even despite being like a state-based organization, do you think there'll be any liaising or kind of consultation with Terry now that she's in that new role?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Victorian and the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby will be jointly writing to Terry and sort of requesting a meeting with her so that we can discuss the issues that we feel are really important to the community. Obviously, Terry has spoken about the plebiscite and how damaging that is, and the need for a free vote. So that's something that we'd obviously like to discuss further, along with access to quality healthcare services for transgender people, especially transgender young people, and ensuring that LGBTI people and especially children at school are safe to participate and go to school.
No, definitely. I spoke with Terry earlier this week, and aside from obviously the plebiscite, which everyone's talking about, or the proposed plebiscite, she was saying that she kind of wants to focus also on access to PrEP for people across the country, and also the mental health of young LGBTI people. But yeah, do you think there are other issues as well, which perhaps, you know, she should be looking at as well, that perhaps aren't in the public discourse, that not many people are acknowledging as much, or...?
Well, I mean, from a lobby perspective, we're always looking at how the rights of LGBTI Victorians and Australians can be progressed so that we achieve equality. There's obviously a number of areas that this could be looked at. And I think they're some of the discussions that we'd really like to have with her.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9, and we're speaking with Dale Park from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Dale, with this particular new appointment within the Labor Party, so it's a shadow position, is it really does it have any influence given that there's not actually a portfolio on the other side?
I think it does have the opportunity to influence. I mean, for those people who may not be aware of Ms. Butler, she is a very strong politician who speaks very eloquently and with great authority. And the fact that she has been given this portfolio means that she will be taking issues forward from everything that she said. That really should engage the coalition to actually respond and really ensure that they are considering the rights and the needs of LGBTI Australians.
What's interesting, though, is she hasn't been in Parliament for that long. And, you know, I was reading that she was in Kevin Rudd's, you know, old seat in Griffith in Queensland. But on the Liberal side, they've actually got quite a few of our community.
Yep.
And none of them are spokespersons.
Well, I think if we look at who the Liberal Party have put forward, or the coalition have put forward as their spokesperson, with it being Attorney Brandis, mm-hmm. What that's doing is putting LGBTI issues at the cabinet level and at that discussion, and whether there was any of our community who would have been able to have as much of a voice at that cabinet level probably wouldn't have been the case.
It seems like we're getting a voice, but it's not really our voice in the sense that, and obviously every time that there's some sort of, person appointed, there's people in the community that will say, yeah, but they don't represent us, or they're not one of us. Shouldn't there be one of us?
It's an interesting point. I think allies are very important. We will not progress our cause, our community, without allies. So what if we have an ally speaking on our behalf and speaking for us, then what we need to do is ensure that we have that connection with them, that they are hearing us, that they're listening to what our issues are. Obviously, it would be fantastic to have someone who spoke directly from a perspective of being part of the community, but no one can ever truly represent every view within that community. So I will take someone who is an ally and is going to speak passionately and in a supportive way for our community.
Do you feel like, given Victoria has Martin Foley, and now with the announcement of Terry Butler on a federal level, they have this equality spokesperson, that in the foreseeable future, the Liberal Party may follow suit and have, an actual legitimate, equality spokesperson?
Well, I hope so. I mean, if we can look to, other countries. Mm-hmm. There is an equalities minister in the Conservative government within the UK. That government also pushed forward mm-hmm. and got through marriage equality. So it's not that it can't be aligned to a Conservative or mm-hmm. coalition policy or platform. It may not have happened yet, but that doesn't mean, and it shouldn't mean, that it can't happen in the future.
Of course. Oh, sorry.
Isn't the fact now, though, that they're just following the Greens, in the sense that, we know in this last election, Labor's primary vote was down. It's interesting in that time that the Liberals, say that, and yet if the Liberals didn't have the Nationals, they were, the coalition were really low, the Liberals. But is it just that Labor are going, hang on a minute, we've got a major problem. We're losing our base. So therefore, what are the things that the Greens are doing? We better do that.
I mean, I don't think I could speak on behalf of if that's what Labor's policy or that's their decision. But I think it's anything that is going to make politicians and political parties think about the way that they do things and truly judge whether they are representing the views of the wider community. And community views change. Hopefully we continue to move forward and progress. And that should be reflected in the way that the Liberal Party, the Coalition, the Labour Party, the Greens, look at their policies and the way that they engage with the public.
What's your official position in regards to the lobby here in Victoria in regards to the plebiscite?
The lobby's official position?
Yeah.
Well, we are obviously very strongly advocating for a free vote within Parliament. We believe that this is something that can be legislated and should be legislated. The indication from numerous polls are that the majority of the people want this. We elect politicians to make these legislative decisions for us. We should let them do that.
Which is absolutely 100% true. But and I did read that Terry was looking at doing a private members bill mm-hmm. next week. But then I read, or I heard recently on Joy, Tim Wilson, saying that it won't actually get to be, spoken on the floor. So really, is it worth it? Is it worth her doing that private bill?
I think it is, because what it does is it gets us talking about it. Hopefully it gets the main media talking about it. And therefore, people who may not be as engaged in this discussion, this agenda, actually have their awareness awoken a little. And if we do have to go to the plebiscite, then we've had this discussion about it. We're talking about the benefits of having marriage equality, so that people can be respected because of the people they love and not discriminated against.
Just on a final note, Dale, I guess Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby recently had their, Rainbow Votes election survey, mm-hmm. Where they spoke to different parties about, their opinion. Was there anything in particular which came out of that which was quite prominent that, you know, maybe other people might not know?
I mean, I think some of the things that come out of there may not be necessarily that surprising to some of us. I mean, I would, maybe because we work in that space, I'd encourage people to go onto our website and look at the things that came out. I think what came out strongly was a commitment from all parties to take LGBTI people more seriously. However, there's obviously still a lot more to do.
Of course. No. Thank you for joining us, Dale. That was Dale from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
The Informer's Ruby Susan caught up with the Huffington Post's Queer Voices editor, Noel Mickelson, on the back of the recent Democratic Convention.
You're listening to The Informer. I'm joined once again by Noel Mickelson, located in New York, who is the editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post Queer Voices. Thank you so much for joining us, Noah.
Yeah, I love being here. Thanks.
Now, the Republican Convention has come to an end after 4 days, and now we're in the middle of the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, that's right. It's really a circus for both of them. I mean, what went on at the Republican National Convention was just crazy. From Melania Trump, who is Trump's wife, her speech plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech from 2008, just to all the craziness that was going on there. Now that that's over, the Democratic National Convention, and there's craziness happening there, too. So it's just 2 weeks of total nuttiness happening in America right now.
These take place in pretty big arenas, don't they? Thousands of people go. We don't really have an equivalent.
So it's where they decide who's going to be the nominee for each party. So they chose Trump for the Republican Party. And then yesterday, in a very historic moment, they chose Hillary Clinton to be the Democratic nominee. So obviously our very first female candidate for president, and a really big deal for a lot of reasons.
I heard that she had some pretty incredible speakers at hers, including Meryl Streep.
Yes, and you know, the Republican National Convention didn't really have anyone very fabulous. So it's funny, they had like Scott Baio, who was on Happy Days. No one really even knows who he is. They had some like washed up male model. And then you get to the Democratic National Convention, and it's like you said, Meryl Streep and Alicia Keys and all these people who are there who are like A-list celebrities. So it was quite a division between the two different conventions.
Now, there was a bit of excitement heading into the Democratic National Convention. Apparently, there was some leaks. Apparently, Russia was mentioned. Could you let us know what's going on there?
They're still figuring that out. Yes, there's some leaks regarding a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, now they're claiming that Russia is the one behind it. And actually today, Donald Trump said that he hopes that Russia leaks all of Hillary Clinton's emails, which is a crazy thing for him to say. But it does look like that Russia has been involved in the leaks. And so it has people really concerned about what that means for the election. Or, you know, could they rig the election? Could that have an effect on what happens here? But it's all just developing right now. But it's absolutely crazy. We've never seen anything like this before.
Well, I know Putin as well as Kim Jong-un have been two world leaders who have endorsed Trump.
Yeah, I mean, you just think about those two men supporting Trump and what that means.
Yeah.
That in and of itself should scare people, you know?
Absolutely. But going back to the Republican National Convention, though, while it was quite an angry 4 days, there were no anti-LGBT platforming. There was no...
It's very interesting because the platform that they did approve, the actual platform of the party that they signed into effect, basically, was very anti-queer. But you're right, there wasn't a whole lot of even conversation about queer people from the actual floor, from people giving speeches. So that's an interesting thing to think about, too. Like, why is the rhetoric so grave and so dire in their platform, but then no one is actually talking about it there? I think part of it is that they think they probably have other issues to really attend to right now instead. But I think we're going to be hearing that rhetoric as the campaign continues and as we get closer and closer to November. I don't think we're going to see them, you know, getting warm and cuddly with queer people. But the way that it rolled out was very interesting.
No, I had never expected to see a huge tent full of Republicans cheer for LGBTQ people. I didn't even know Trump would know LGBTQ as an act. But on to some really positive news I read about. So I've heard there is now the possibility of change in blood donorship laws, in the ability that it may be opening up to gay men or men who have sex with men.
Yeah, it's huge. So, you know, in the United States right now, for a long time, if you were a queer man or a man who had sex with other men, or a woman who's had sex with a man who's had sex with other men, you couldn't donate blood at all. Recently, in December, they changed that. So you just couldn't do it if you'd had sex with a man within the last 12 months. Now, there's some kind of signal, basically, that they're going to maybe overturn that. The FDA, which monitors all that for us.
So what's the FDA stand for?
It's the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. That's so cool. They basically posted something saying that they were looking for people to offer reasons why they should get rid of the ban. I mean, they're open to hearing these kind of arguments as long as it's based on scientific proof. They've never done that before. So it looks like it's going to be a turning point and that they're at least willing to consider changing the way that they assess the risk. Right now, it's based on time, so the 12-month period. They're saying maybe they might base it instead on like behavioral risks. So if you were in a monogamous relationship, it would be okay. So things like that. And very exciting. A lot of this, I think, is coming out of what happened in Orlando last month, where all these people were injured and queer people couldn't even donate blood because they were forbidden.
And there was a big call for blood donors as well, wasn't there?
There was so many, exactly, and people are saying, I can't donate because of these crazy, crazy restrictions. So for the first time, it looks like possibly the government is going to at least consider overturning that, which is huge.
Thank you so much for joining us, Noah. Talk to you again soon.
Joy 94.9. We did have an email in on joy.org.au. The Victorian ALP has had an LGBTI policy committee before the Greens, and it has influenced a lot of national and state policy. Thanks for sending that in via the Joy app.
Thank you to my guest today, Dale Park, and to the team at Hide and Seek for their exclusive interview on last night's show. Today's head producer was myself, with additional production by Scott Tetley. A full rundown on today's story will be on the Joy website shortly, and for a podcast of today's program and our other stories, visit joy.org.au/theinformer. The Informer will be back on Monday evening at 6:30, and up next is Stand Up Straight. I'm Matthew Wade.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.